No testimony or witnessing on behalf of the tale is required, and yet Rachel Lynn Strongheart felt compelled to write an essay about her personal experience with the story, The Little Prince, Le Petit Prince, as she prepared to become a teacher of elementary students in Binghamton. She writes, "The Little Prince by Antoine de Saint-Exupéry was not my first children's book. Of all the stories I read or was told, however, it best embodies and safeguards the magic I felt and believed in as a child. Over 20 years later, I still return to my little hero and companion when I lose touch with life's truths and wonders. The story and the ever-evolving meaning I construct from it have superseded the boundaries of a key literacy event to become a cloak of loving protection and the impetus for my professional endeavors. Although it would be misleading to credit one brief tale with being my sole emotional weather vane, no other story has had such a sustained and sustaining impact. Oftentimes, I have felt like Saint-Exupéry's stranded pilot in the desert, always concerned with matters of consequence, that self-imposed cage of practicality that ignores the heart and withers creativity. It is only the wisdom of the little prince that allows a smile or kind word to take precedence over my ever-present and ever-growing list of things to do. As an adult and educator, joy and the need for constant growth and inquiry seem so easily obscured by the hunger for a rational and predictable formula for living. Fortunately, the little prince reminds me that the best in life often lies in the lap of the unexpected. He teaches me to see myself as a fellow traveler, perhaps not from the asteroids, but certainly on a mission larger than myself. Years after my first reading, he continues to speak to the part of me that marvels at sunsets, tends roses and vulnerable creatures, and digs up baobabs. He whispers in my ear that it is always very important to care and be careful. Like the pilot in this story, whose childhood drawings of an elephant being digested inside a boa constrictor were misconstrued by adults to be lopsided hats and taken to be indications of meager artistic aptitude. I was a child painfully aware of the gulf between school and life outside its confines. Early on, I became convinced that success in school required sacrificing my world of magic and imagination for one mired in facts and figures. Perhaps reading The Little Prince added fuel to the fires of my rebellion, pushing me to declare my opposition to fully participating in what felt like an alien process. Or perhaps my nature and upbringing would have necessitated such a stance under any circumstances. It is hard to be sure. What is clear is that those he meets on his journey, the pilot, the king, the conceited man, the tippler, the businessman, the lamplighter, and the geographer, seemed much like many of the adults I knew, and a distant cry from the kind of grown-up I hoped to be. Ironically, as an adult, I have struggled to outgrow characteristics from each of these story characters in an attempt to awaken within myself the magical sight of a child and join it with the nurturing and guiding insight of a teacher. As with all the landmarks and bookmarks in my life, large and small, this story's importance arose from within the realm and context of my experience. That I cannot remember a single book discovered or read in school gives testimony to the fact that whatever texts we used were largely divorced from anything I considered meaningful. Literacy in my early education was narrowly defined by phonics and basal readers, whose characters did not even faintly resemble people I knew or the lives they led. I knew that proficiency in reading and writing was the yardstick with which my intelligence and achievement were measured, and the porthole through which I had to pass to enter the selectively enriched world of gifted students. The little prince required nothing but curiosity and excitement as I entered into its private world, alive with words and pictures. Words of Rachel Lynn Strongheart, who might have added that remembering what we learn from the little prince is a key to living well, pure and simple. The original book has been adapted for the stage by Rick Cummins and John Scholar, and the Guthrie Theater summarizes what we encounter in the stage play. As a child, an aviator became disillusioned with the lack of imagination in grown-up life. He now prefers to keep his own company, which he does until his plane goes down in the Sahara Desert, miles from human habitation. He is surprised to encounter a little prince who claims to be from another planet. The little prince appears each day at sunset and describes life on his planet and the reason he set out on his journey. As the little prince recounts his travels and the people he encountered, the aviator's own situation becomes more dire, with dwindling provisions, hallucinations, and a damaged plane. Perhaps among the little prince's story and lessons will be the key to the aviator's survival and a renewal of his own imaginative possibilities. The Bloomsburg Theater Ensemble creates the magical, wonder-filled world of The Little Prince at the Alvina Krauss Theater, opening April 5th and running through April 27th, with previews April 3rd and 4th. We had a chance to speak by phone with Sarah Elizabeth York, who directs, and Alejandro Christopher Rodolfi, who is the lighting designer, about their telling of the tale and its impact on them.
The first time I read it was in fourth grade. I was 11. I believe I was 10 or 11. And we read it. We were assigned it to read as a class. And I remember the book and the story itself was very impactful to me because it was a book that really discussed and explored imagination in childhood. And it felt pivotal to me at a point in my life where, you know, as a child burgeoning on adolescence, you're being told to grow up or be more mature or, you know, do certain things. So what I found really resonated with me in the book was that it explored what it was like to be a child and engage in your imagination and that you should not abandon that. And I think that was really important for me at a time where I was being told to grow up or a time where I felt like I had to grow up. The book gave me permission to still have a sense of imagination and a sense of play.
What about the watercolors and the illustrations? They were key to telling the story.
Yeah, the illustrations are extremely important. And it's interesting because it is a bit more of an, I don't want to say like an adult book. It's not. It's still a children's book. But it felt more grown up. And in fourth grade, I had read The Little Prince. I read Little Women. I read books that started to become, I think, a little bit more intellectual and a little more mature in terms of thinking. But what the illustrations did were they allowed for a more intelligent form of storytelling, but still utilized drawings and pictures to connect with children. And so I thought it was a really smart use of the illustrations, and the author himself drew them. And so knowing that he contributed to his own stories with those illustrations and the way that he wanted it to be told was impactful because you're starting to get away from picture books. And here you are picking up a more adult book that still has pictures.
Alejandro, please.
I have a much different perspective, I would argue, because I did not grow up reading this. I had only read it last month when Sarah contacted me to actually work on the show. And so I think I have a different view and take on it, because in the sense that Sarah was saying that it's okay to still have imagination and be a child, I think for me it was a reminder to be imaginative, to explore childlike wonder, because I kind of walked into it blind. I just started reading the script the night I was sent it, and for me it was very just eye-opening and I guess intriguing in the way that it reminded me of certain plays that I'd read in college, but in this like lens of just through the eyes of the child that really drew me in.
And you work with light, and you can create a sense of wonder for us and maybe a little darkness when that's called for. What have you been experimenting with and discovering as you've been going through the script, knowing what you have available to you at the Alvina Krauss Theater?
For me, it's very much trying to find those colorful patterns and shapes and imagery that was presented to me both in the script, because it uses a lot of things like, I remember the first thing that stuck out to me was magenta sunsets became one of the big driving factors for me. And then also our scenic designer, Chris, presented us with a design that very much looked like an open storybook. And so I was trying to find ways to present like pages and different, like almost nightlights in a way. So part of it just feels like reading under the stars, but in just the most magical sense. And so finding different textures and colors that could best represent the text itself, but then also the action on stage. There's a lot of location hopping, which can be very difficult moving from space to space to space. But in a blink of an eye, we need to go from a world with a king to a world with a conceited man, and then there's a fox or a desert flower, and it all needs to flow seamlessly. And I think lights definitely help transition us in a smooth sense, so that as a viewer, we can go from world to world without being confused.
Sarah, what do you say as you see this coming together with your vision of the play?
So for me, having read it, you know, 25 years ago, and then reading it now, like Alejandro said, he was looking at it with fresh eyes. And so being at my age now, like I'm also looking at it with fresh eyes, but have an attachment to the story. It has always been one of my favorite stories and one of my favorite books. And so in reading it this time, something that really struck me was that the little prince feels like a shadow or an echo of the aviator. So I think that there can be a lot of interpretations of the book. But for me, it has felt like, in a lot of the instances, and in the way I'm directing it, the little prince feels like he is a piece of the aviator's childhood. He is a shadow of him. He is an echo of him. And so when I was speaking, you know, early on with my designers and having conversations about this world, I wanted it to feel like we were opening a storybook right on the stage. And it felt like it was very childlike, and it felt like it was from the imagination of a child. And the things that contrast that are the adults in the show. You know, like the aviator looks, he's like, you know, dressed in period clothing from the time that it was written, like 1943, 44. He looks like an aviator from the 1940s. And then he walks into this cartoon-like, illustration-like world of bright, saturated colors and papery textures. And his airplane is even a paper plane. And so it's like a toy plane. And so it's really cool to see the contrast and the juxtaposition of what it is like to be an adult in a child's world. And so I really leaned into the idea that the little prince is, in fact, an echo of the aviator. And in talking to designers, we had spoken about ways that we can make that feel holistic and connect with the story. And so seeing it all come together has been really spectacular. And I'm very lucky that I have a group of designers who I've worked with before. And like, we all understand each other pretty intimately, actually, as artists. And so, you know, it's cool because like I'll have an idea and I'll share the idea, but I can't quite articulate exactly what it is. And then like Chris, our scenic designer, and then Alejandra, the lighting designer, Jennifer, the costume designer, and Sid, our sound designer, have been able to be like, okay, well, what about this? The idea exists in my head, and then they're manifesting it in the space, which is really cool to see come together.
And you mentioned when you were reading it the first time, fourth grade, you had a sense of being in that in-between time,
mm-hmm.
childhood, but mature, please, and get along, mm-hmm. and grow up. Mm-hmm. How do those tensions, or does that tension play out, and how do you help us not slip one way or the other in the way the figures interact with each other?
That's a great question. I think that, especially right now, what feels like in 2025, allowing us to rediscover our childhood and the simpler things feels more important than ever. And I feel like it is really easy to slip one way or another. And, you know, I think that the point is that it's not black and white. You know, it's not like you're just an adult or you're just a kid. And I think that those things can coexist, because as we do age and as we mature, we start to lose sight of the things we once loved. We start to lose sight of the simple beauty in life. And so right now, you know, I even see less kids outside playing, less kids imagining, less kids doing things that are creative. And I see them, you know, with technology or feeling like they need to be more grown up or be more adult. And so I think what this show does, and it does have those tensions, you know, there's an altercation between the little prince and the aviator over what they both deem important. They have an argument about what is important. And I think that that is such a universal thing, and that as we begin to age and as we begin to burst into adulthood, the things that once seemed important to us seem silly. But to a child, what is important to them is an immediate need, is an immediate of immediate importance. And I think as we get older, we really easily lose sight of that. And I have a 10-year-old nephew and 3-year-old nieces, and they definitely, especially while directing this play, have reminded me to stop and kind of assess in the moment what is important and what isn't. Because something might be a necessity for them, or it's like life or death for them. And I'm like, that's so silly. Why are they reacting that way? But I think something that the play teaches us is our individual perspectives are so different, in that if we could just shift the way we see things to maybe see something from another person's perspective, we could all be a little kinder to each other. We could all be a little bit more understanding, a little empathetic. And I think if we just shift our perspective to help see the world through one another's eyes, we can allow our adulthood and our inner child to coexist. We can be both. We don't have to be just one or the other.
Alejandro, as you're watching this show develop, is there a certain way that you consider lighting the rose? Do you work with the rose in a different way from the way you work with the fox, for example?
Yes, and. So when I'm building my light plots with the inventory that was given to me, I think it's important to cover the bases. Like, I was taught that you need to be able to see faces. You need to be able to see anyone. Like, when I was presented the stage plot, if someone's going to be standing on a platform upstage, they should be lit just as well as anyone downstage and things like that. But then when it comes to moments that are specifically specified and that are specific to the script, such as the rose or the fox, being like in a forest, or we have a scene in a mountainscape. In my mind, you have to have specials, and you have to make them stand out in certain ways, and whether that comes through colors or shapes in my mind. So for like the rose, I chose, every lighting designer has favorite colors, and for me, the R39 is what it's called, and it's this beautiful pink that I'm using with a rose gobo, which just casts shadows on the stage. And so anytime the rose is mentioned, the hints of these pinks cast across the stage and hit the actors in a way that they're silhouetted in ways that just, whether it's them thinking about it or whether they're physically in the space with us. Or for the echoes, for the mountaintop, the set itself, we bring on these very sharp-looking mountains. And so I tried to find gobos that could cast very sharp, hard lines on the little prince as he's standing on this mountaintop, just shouting to no one. And so it's really just finding physical elements that can kind of reflect what is being said or just the locations that we're in. And so it's just really finding those individual pieces and parts that can just make each moment stand out.
Well, let's stay with the rose for a moment. The prince himself is confused about the relationship with the rose, right? How does that play out? It plays out as it does in the story?
Yeah, it's so interesting because I think each of the characters in the play represents something in our lives, right? Like a relationship that we've once had, or a relationship that we remember fondly, or a relationship that challenged us. And, you know, I think a lot of the times the rose is very deeply misunderstood. I think she's very often looked at as she is selfish and self-serving and very dependent. And in our table work is when, you know, we sit down and discuss the world of the play, we discuss the characters. Something I'd really encouraged all the actors to focus on was the curiosity of the people and the characters rather than the cynicism of who they are. And when I look at the rose, I imagine, she's brand new, right? So she's just bloomed. So it's almost like she's a newborn. Like, she has no idea who she is, where she is, what she needs. She is completely dependent on her caretaker, who ends up being the little prince. And, you know, it is very much like a child depending on a parent. And we don't call children selfish for that, right? And so I think as the rose begins to grow and develop and learn, you know, she adapts and and can take care of herself in certain ways and can be more sufficient, but it doesn't mean that she isn't longing for that connection or that love or that care that she previously had. And so it's really interesting because I think very often she is looked at in a negative light, but when I look at her, I imagine it is how we raise and teach and rear children. And once they become adults, it's, oh, you're fine now, grow up. Like, you can take care of yourself. And it doesn't mean that she doesn't still want that love or affection or attention. And I think it's what we all experience as children. And I think each of the characters in the play exhibit childlike behaviors and adult behaviors. And I think that they are always hanging in the balance, and maybe like a character leans more one way than the other. But I think the Rose is, I think her relationship with the little prince challenges him in a way that forces him to seek questions about himself and about the world. And through his relationship with the Rose, he ends up going onto these interplanetary travels and then ends up on Earth. And through these travels, you know, meets the Aviator. And it is almost as though she was the catalyst for him to I don't want to say become an adult, but she was the catalyst for him to inspire him to ask the questions that adults ask. What is this relationship? How do I feel about this relationship? Why don't I understand this? And she is his first love. And maybe it's not a romantic love, but he loves her. He cares about her. And I think each of these characters representing something that most people experience, whether that be love or loss or grief or friendship, I think that she creates something in him that encourages him to go out and seek more.
Sarah, you mentioned that you feel that the little prince is in some way a shadow or an echo of the Aviator. You also said that you talked with the designer and perhaps other members of the production team to help us understand that.
So there are some elements in costume design that kind of link them. They both have glasses that are very similar, and so it's a costume choice that, you know, they both have these glasses that look alike. And then there are these idiosyncrasies in terms of their movements or the way they speak, where there are very specific things that they do that mirror or echo one another. And so they're really small and really subtle because I want the audience to be able to kind of interpret that for themselves. But I also think the really spectacular thing about this story is everybody's going to walk away with a different interpretation. And so I don't ever want to like thrust that upon an audience. I want them to be able to walk away and ask themselves, oh, what did this mean to me? How did I feel about this, et cetera. But in terms of the little prince being a shadow of the Aviator, we've talked about these movements, these mirroring gestures, these idiosyncrasies, the costume elements, the ways that they stand with their hands on their hips, sometimes the way that they move the same way. And so there are these really small moments. And then it's also kind of represented in some of the staging and the blocking. There's ways in which sometimes the little prince moves and the Aviator moves behind him as though he's like a shadow. And so there's these really cool, very particular moments that allow it to really pop. And we also discussed it a lot in terms of the storytelling, like the little prince, the Rose, is this thing that he takes care of and that tamed him. But in the Aviator's life, like, who was the Rose? Was the Rose his first love? You know, so it's finding out what does that mean to the individual actors and then finding really clever ways to not only stage it, but represent it in the costume or in the design. That's the answer from me. And then I can pass it over to Alejandro.
For me, it's finding specials and certain moments in the show lighting-wise. I remember we did a first pass of the show during our dry tech this last week, and in the final moments that we see the prince, there was this one light cue, and I remember Sarah went, oh no, you've done something dangerous, because I'm going to want to see that more. And so we end up taking that idea of this look, and I don't want to spoil it, but we took this one look from the end of the show and started building it in throughout the show that anytime the prince arrives or at the end of, there's kind of a mid-act structure for you can technically do an intermission, but just certain like moments in the show that are these like builds and rises and falls that mainly with entrances of the Aviator and the Little Prince, that anytime they're kind of in the specific spot on stage, they have these, I don't want to say repetition, but we keep using a certain system of lights to kind of connect them. And it's just that repetition that I think really builds the connection for them as kind of two sides of the same coin.
Do you use any incidental music?
Yeah, so there is music within the show. So there's a composition written by the playwright. And then we also have a sound designer who has added in additional other sounds. And so for me, I wanted it to feel very otherworldly, you know, when we're in the planetary travels and when the little prince is on his own planet. And then how does the sound change when we are in the world on Earth? And so Sid, our sound designer, in addition to, you know, like what we have from the playwright, they've really built this beautiful soundscape and ambiance to kind of distinguish where we are. And sometimes those are like, you know, diegetic sounds or natural sounds that happen in nature or happen in a space, whether that be the desert or whether that be a forest or whether that be a garden. And then there's these really beautiful compositions that are almost like themes for the aviator or themes for the little prince or themes for the rose that are very truthful and individual to them. And we hear them throughout. And they paint this auditory story as well, which is really lovely.
Please tell us who is in the cast.
Yeah, so Aaron White, who is a resident artist here at BTE, plays the fox, the conceited man, the lamplighter, and he is the voice of the mountain echo. Amy Renee Byrne is the snake, the king, the desert flower, and the voice of the wall of roses. And Kimi Maroya is the rose, the businessman, and the geographer. And so those are our three resident artists that are the full-time BTE actors. And so, you know, our audiences have seen them for years and have loved their performances for years. We also have Nick Fawcett was in A Christmas Carol this past year. He was a guest actor in A Christmas Carol, and he is back. He is playing the aviator. So that is a familiar face for BTE audiences if they've been to our shows, to our Christmas show this year. And then we have three children actors splitting the role of the little prince. We have two principal actors, David Knight and Margot Sutton Figueroa. And then we have Aiden Kawas is our understudy. David and Margot each have about 9 performances, and Aiden has 4. Understudies typically at BTE usually get 1 performance for the kids, but Aiden has several performances. So since the lead, the child is the lead and has such a substantial amount of lines and work, we really wanted the kids to be able to take to the stage and be a part of it and really all share this experience together.
One more thing then, we don't have to be a child, we don't have to bring a child.
Right. The show has something for everyone. And, you know, a lot of the questions people have been asking me is, who's going to love this show, children or adults? And I think it's a great question, but I also don't have the answer because I think the show has something for everyone. And arguably, I think it might impact adults in a completely different way than it impacts children. Children will come and look at the beautiful colors and look at the funny moments and laugh at the fox and see the costumes and how fabulous they are. And they'll be excited by the visual imaginative world, which is like, as a child, when I read the book, I took it at face value. I'm like, wow, this is magic. This is imagination. And then as an adult, I'm like, oh my God, this is so much deeper than that. And so I think there is something for everyone, whether you are 5, whether you are 50, whether you are just tapping into your adulthood, you're an adolescent. I think there is honestly and truly something for everyone.
Sarah Elizabeth York, director, and Alejandro Christopher Ridolfi, lighting designer of The Little Prince, adapted from the book by Antoine Saint-Exupéry and the adapters, Rick Cummins and John Scholler. And a footnote about Rick Cummins, his biography suggests that he, at least for some time, lived in our area, Marshall's Creek. And the show will open at the Bloomsburg Theater Ensemble on April 5th and run through April 27th with preview performances April 3rd and 4th. And we have a chance to let you know that those pay-what-you-will previews get underway at 7:30. And that's also the start time for the regular performances, Thursdays, Fridays, and Saturdays through the 27th of April. And there are Sunday matinees at 3. Again, the Alvina Krauss Theater, 226 Center Street in downtown Bloomsburg. The Little Prince, presented by the Bloomsburg Theater Ensemble, April 5th through the 27th, with preview performances the 3rd and 4th. For more information, on the web, bte.org, bte.org, or the box office, area code 570 784-8181, 784-8181. We're hearing this plucky music to remind us of the star theme that is in the story, The Little Prince. And the BTE folks have arranged a very special event on Saturday, April 26th. It's the Little Prince Stargazing Night. It gets underway at 9:10 p.m. at Fernville Family Park in Hemlock Township. And you're invited to join BTE for a family-friendly stargazing night, and it will be after the April 26th performance of The Little Prince. You'll learn about the constellations the Little Prince must have passed on his journey to Earth, and that's all during a special talk by Commonwealth University professor Dr. Michael Shepherd. Afterwards, there will be an open stargazing period, and they encourage everyone to take along a pair of binoculars. And so for more information about admission and all of the wonders of the stargazing night and the production itself, bte.org, bte.org.